Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Matthew, aka Cité Bontemp, and you are listening to Why Are People Into That with Tina Horn.
Maxine Holloway.
Hello.
Before we dive into our subject today, will you tell the story of the little fuck film that we made, which, you know, has been lost to history, but now that maybe we can preserve a little bit of the spirit of that movie here today?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh my God, what year was that?
You know, I want to say it was 2011 or 12.
Oh, it would have been before that, because it was really? Before I moved to New York.
Oh, is that? Oh God. Okay.
So I want to say like
9 or 10. Yeah. Which is about a decade ago.
Oh my God. And we had already known each other for a little while. So yeah. we go back as part of the point of this story.
We were already very, very friendly. And it was in the beginning of my porn career and yours as well.
I think so, yeah.
Really, you know, not the very beginning, but the early years.
Yeah, the early years.
And I wanted to make a film, and it was called Seeing Red.
Mm-hmm.
It was about feminism and sex and magic.
This was kind of
revenge.
Like... it was kind of the height of the feminist porn boom. Can we call it a boom?
Yeah,
it was like
it was a boom. It
sort
was
of like
good old days of feminist porn.
Yeah, it was like the middle of the decade that Good for Her in Toronto was doing the feminist porn awards, and I think there was like a little bit of money still, even though it was after the recession, like in the Bay Area for like queer feminist arty political indie.
Yeah.
Porno. And we just happened to find ourselves being professional sluts and artists in the Bay Area at that time.
Definitely. It was, and the way I approached filmmaking at that point was, I have this creative idea and I want to communicate it on film, blah, blah, blah. But it was also like, who of my friends do I want to fuck?
You know, that game... still working for me after all these years. It's really nice. It's a really nice way. And some of my most long-lasting friendships, you know, have come from people that I've been like, I could date you, or we could get paid to have sex.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to start anything.
Okay, so Seeing Red. So you wrote the script.
Yes,
it had a script,
and it it's been a while, but it had to do with Gayle Dines,
right?
The anti-pornography, quote unquote, feminist. There was a dinner party. There was some slut shaming. There was some sex work shaming. And then in comes this character who is a sex magic fairy,
mm-hmm,
in all of their adorned in glitter and wings, mm-hmm, and leather.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I cast you in.
Oh yeah,
as the sex fairy,
the magical
like
sex fairy.
It was kind of like a fairy godmother character.
Yeah,
but with leather and fucking.
Yeah, well, it was
bippity boppity boop, lots of boop.
So basically, the idea was like your character gets whore shamed. Mm-hmm. At a dinner party, and then my character, who is like your fairy godmother, Glinda the Good Witch, Jiminy Cricket conscience, comes in and is like, you can do this. I'm like your like clapback queen.
Exactly.
Or so you like have this like fantasy where I'm like, get yourself together, girl.
Yeah, I think I like... because of the horse shaming, I like disassociated the dinner party and then go into this dream where I get in touch with my fairy whore mother,
mm-hmm,
and that, of course, involved being fucked by you.
Naturally. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how I got my mojo back.
Uh-huh.
And then I think it just ended with me, like, getting up on the dinner table and stripping.
That sounds right.
You know.
Yeah.
Fade to black.
So we filmed this little indie picture in...
It was Viracocha.
Viracocha.
It was on Valencia and 21st Street.
Is it not there anymore?
San Francisco. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Viracocha. Mm-hmm. So we filmed it all day, and it was like a queered female crew for the most part, right? And then that movie never... No image or footage from that movie ever saw the light of day for a tragic reason.
Like one selfie on my BlackBerry. That's it. Yeah, all the footage. I was making the film with a filmmaker named Lex Sloan, who was also working at Frameline at the time.
Yeah.
And they had all the footage on their laptop and the external hard drive. They had two copies, like a good filmmaker does.
This is like sort of before you could so quickly hop on the Wi-Fi and back things up on the cloud.
There was no cloud. And if there was, I don't know, we didn't know, we didn't have access to that cloud yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And their bags got stolen while they were at Frameline, and all the months of work and the beautiful, like, juicy camera we had on the slide. You put a camera on a slide thing and it just glides. And our sex scene was, like, filmed on this, like, super professional tracky glide thing.
And oh, my God. I don't even remember that.
It was going to change the world.
Fuck.
It was gonna be a game changer. And the game left town.
Ugh.
But so then we just have to kind of like frame it as like this amazing performance art piece that we did one day in a weird basement in the Mission in San Francisco.
To an audience of a half dozen people.
To half a dozen of our friends. Yeah.
I remember, people applauded when we were done.
Yeah, absolutely. We did a great job.
Definitely.
I remember what both of us were wearing. I had on like this green mini skirt.
Yes.
And you had on like these black leather pants and wings and glitter.
Oh my God.
And, like, wings. Crop top. And we fucked on the stairs in this basement.
Yeah.
It was grand.
It was grand. God. Also, I think that's maybe the only time that we were ever on camera together.
I think that's true, actually.
That's unfortunate.
Which is another shame that is not
available,
a relic that we can access.
Well, the night is young.
Yes, very true. We're in New York City right now. Anything can happen.
True. Maxine Holloway, there are so many things that I know you for, and that you are known around the world for, besides being an indie feminist anti-porn pornographer. You are a sex worker, have been an out sex worker for a long time in many parts of the industry. And you're also a very active sex work activist and have been for a long time, especially this year, not only because you got your, you are now a mistress of public health.
I am.
Mazel tov.
Thank
on
you.
That.
MPH.
MPH. And, but also, you, along with Arabelle Raphael, organized Bay Pros Support, which has been one of the many organizations, sex worker led by sex workers for sex workers, organizations that have arisen since the passing of the new American law, FOSTA SESTA, mm-hmm. commonly known as FOSTA SESTA. And you have done a ton of organizing with Arabelle and that whole team and community support, as well as throwing punk shows for which I just got a t-shirt, which I can't wait to wear the fuck out of.
You're gonna rock it so well.
Thank you. Oh, and you were also saying that have been getting sort of more into like production and taking like portraits and photography of like other workers.
Yeah, I was a photographer before I became a sex worker, and then kind of let that go. I've been a pretty busy person for the past couple of years. But lately I have gotten back behind the camera and have been making some portraits of sex workers and taking escort photos for folks and different portraits for my sex worker interview column called Brain Throbs and Blowjobs that
Great
I write
name.
For Broke Ass Stewart. And so that's been a combination of interviewing Bay Area sex workers and then also photographing them, which cool. I've really, really enjoyed.
Yeah. And we were just trying to figure out if we had met originally, like in that general scene that we were talking about. But I think that we met because you were, what was your role at Femina Potens? Also, is it pronounced Femina Potens? Femina Potens?
It can be. I always called it Femina Potens.
Femina Potens.
But different people called it different things. It's Latin. That's all I know.
It's dead.
It's a dead language, so you can call whatever the fuck you want.
So that
I did
feminist
a lot of different things there. I don't know. I was like the gallery manager by the end.
Yeah. I feel like I was volunteering and you were the gallery manager.
Oh, it just came to me. You were doing writing.
I was doing the newsletter.
I was like trying to organize the newsletter every month, and you were the copywriter.
Yep.
And that is exactly how we first met.
It's true.
And you were a fantastic writer, and you still are.
Look at me now.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I've come a long way, baby.
I owe it all to, feminist art community organizing. So if anybody wants to ask me, how do you make it as a writer? I will say I don't know what making it means, but I will definitely say that that is a really great place to start.
Yeah.
For many reasons, not the least of which is that you get to make lifelong friendships.
Yes. That was an interesting place for sure, but it has brought some wonderful fucking people into my life, and I feel very grateful for that.
Same. Likewise. Yeah. So, Maxine, mm-hmm. there are so many sexuality topics and sex work topics and kink topics that I feel like you and I have whiled away the hours discussing and could discuss on this podcast right now, but the thing that I am really excited to talk to you about is, why are people into pregnancy? And would you like to explain in your own words why you are more qualified than me to dig into the subject of why are people into pregnancy?
Yeah, absolutely. I am currently about 6 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And
I would say that makes you an expert in your own body.
I think that gives me a little bit of some qualifications to talk about why people are into pregnancy.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, mazel tov again.
Thank you.
You are accomplishing so many conventional things.
Totally. You know, a little bit of porn, a little bit of creating life, just keeping it exciting.
Yeah. And having a mistress degree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have so many questions. I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of questions. I want to talk. Here's where I want to start. What is erotic to you about being pregnant?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I feel like even before I got pregnant, that I eroticized and fetishized pregnancy.
Cool.
To some degree.
And this is your first pregnancy?
Mm-hmm, my first pregnancy. And I've always kind of had like a breeding fetish and currently identify as a hoo cow.
I want you to tell me more about what it means to be a hoo cow.
A hoo cow, it's great to be a hoo cow. So hoo cow means like human cow.
Got it.
Just to clarify that.
Not like who yeah. where, what,
not
when.
Yeah. It's H-U.
Got it.
You could put a dash cow.
Sure.
I make it all one word though.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you are a bovine humid mm-hmm. hybrid. You identify as a hoo cow.
I have a bell. I wear it very proudly most days.
Is this a thing or did you come up with it?
So it is a thing. Like, I like having that, having and being interested in like breeding fantasies and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, you start Googling enough things and hoo cows come up.
Yeah.
Thing. But and it makes a lot of sense because all of these things that like are a part of my sexuality of like my sexuality pertaining to like breeding fantasies of like being used to be impregnated and nursing and being milked and things like that.
Yeah.
Just make a lot of sense when you start looking at like a who cow dynamic and what who cows are, who cows' purposes are. And so
what is their purpose?
Their purpose are to breed and be milked.
Great.
And so those are two activities that I highly enjoy. And now I like took it to the next level because I actually am impregnated and will be lactating soon. So like my who cow abilities just like leveled up a couple notches.
Yeah. You brought it out of the realm of fantasy and really committed.
Yeah. And just to say this, I probably don't have to, but my decision to have a child was not solely attached to my who cow identity. You don't have to get pregnant to identify as a who cow, and not all people that are pregnant identify as who cows. So, but for me, that really happened to work out because I was ready and interested in starting a family, and also am able to separate and combine like this fantasy and fetish element with breeding and cows and milking and insemination and, you know, and it's fun to be a cow. Like, cows love walks. Like,
they taste great.
They taste great in every way. Like, they're really into cheese and ice cream. Like, who cow lifestyle is prime. They love, like, getting their haunches rubbed. Mm. And, like, you know, suckling and milking. Like, it's a very, very good life.
You're so amazing. I am. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that there, in my opinion, there are worse reasons to get pregnant and to choose to be a parent than that it turns you on. You know,
that's real.
Yeah.
Someone recently online said to me, they're like, oh yeah, pregnancy, that makes sense. It's like the goal of sex. And I like, I have such mixed feelings about that statement because it's like A, so heteronormative.
Sure. And
B, like that's not why myself or most people I sleep with, like what their goal of sex naturally is. But they're like, it's hard for me to totally dismiss this like just kind of primal thing of just like, of like getting knocked up and like having someone come inside you and like regardless of gender or science or anything like that.
Sure.
Like that's I think kind of like at the root of like a lot of the like breeding fantasies and things like that is like there's just something super primal about having someone like fill you in that way.
Mm.
And then for it to not just end after that sex act, that they leave something.
Well, you're transformed forever.
Yeah.
Which is a very alluring concept.
Yeah.
That something would be so powerful that you would never be the same.
Definitely. And with a lot of different like DS dynamics, you know, I consider like BDSM stuff as like another way to express closeness with someone.
Yeah.
And like this is like some real 24/7 bonding with my partner who's an excellent who cow caretaker. And like
so like a like, farmer.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't quite get into the farmer thing. That felt a little too old McDonald-y.
Sure. To each their own.
No, it's just a cow taker.
Cow taker. That's good. As somebody who is never interested in becoming a parent or being pregnant, I'm also aware that the focus and in some ways fear and need for control around sexuality and pregnancy, it always makes sense if you bring it back to fear, and it always makes sense if you bring it back to control and what control might mean or what release of control might mean, and like thinking about how the like eroticism of
breeding could even be connected to how long in your life the purpose of sex was not to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And that even it would be at the least an inconvenience, and, you know, also just potentially like life-changing in lots of different ways, whether you choose to have the child, keep the child, have an abortion, as is your right, as it should be, etc. That like if you do have sex and you're not intending to get pregnant and you do get pregnant, that like that is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And something that you're trying to avoid, then that you might have feelings of acute fear and control around, and that you may arrange your entire life around, so that then the idea of like releasing yourself from that and just saying like, fuck it, like I'm gonna get, like this person is gonna come in me, whatever happens happens, or this is the purpose of this happening. I mean, this is all like very abstract to me, but like, yeah. I'm
no, that's, I think there's a lot of truth in that too, like
where you could just let go, because yeah. I mean, I've certainly like not been able to fully let go and enjoy myself during sex because of not wanting to get pregnant, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is like another way of putting that.
Yeah.
So the idea that you might have a fantasy that you could totally let go.
Yeah.
And because it's like not
fear out of the equation.
Like not only is it not a concern, but it's like a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. Totally. And then it's like, oh, well, like the repercussions of that is then something that will then connect us for the rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what.
Yeah.
So there is like this level of like intensity and closeness that I think my partner and I really enjoy and are like able to eroticize and like heighten with the whole who, cow and dynamic.
So what do you think your relationship to your who, cow identity, how do you anticipate it changing? Obviously, there's a lot that's impossible to predict about your future. Mm-hmm. In terms of how you're going to feel and how it's going to be. But have you thought about like how you foresee this identity changing, where as before it's been like sort of anticipatory or aspirational, and now it's like fully and literally embodied in your body?
Yeah.
And then it will be like an experience that you had and that you shared with your partner and that you are now sharing with this like third, with this roommate that you've created. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. I feel like right now is a very special time in my hookah identity, because it is like been what I had been working towards for some time. And like this whole fantasy of breeding, you know, it has now come to fruition.
Yeah.
And I am like a successful who cow. And I could not be happier with like my current state. And just like the physical attributes that change, like, you know, my breasts are bigger, like my belly's finally like fully coming in. And so I like really feel all these who cow like qualities. And so I feel like I'm like at the height of like when I think about what being a who cow is, like I feel like I'm like at the pinnacle of like what I like about that. And then you know, it's this cycle that changes, like, you know, in 3 months I will give birth and I will have my calf, and and then there's like the whole nursing thing, which
right.
is like a whole other like fetish and fantasy that I share, like participate in as well, but that is also connected to who cow stuff, but doesn't always have to be. There's lots of other like nursing stuff that goes really well in all kinds of other fetishes and role plays.
I want to talk about milk and nursing.
Yeah.
And I love everything that you just said about enjoying that your body is
growing and getting juicier in so many different ways. I mean, really, actually, all kinds of people, whether they're people that can get pregnant or not, we do not value size. And we also don't value bodies that secrete in Western culture. Not only are we supposed to be tight bodies that are not unruly, as the Roxane Gay series has recently put it, we're also not supposed to be unruly in terms of our fluids, right? Like, our tits are not supposed to leak.
Yeah, and I feel like my body is like doing all of those things right now. My body looks different every other day. My tits have doubled in size. My stomach is like way out there. I'm bumping into things. I haven't quite started like leaking yet, but I know it's just a matter of time. And like, but honestly, like, I've never felt sexier.
Cool.
I didn't know that I was going to really get into it in that way, even though it's something that I've fantasized about and eroticized, and I myself feel very attracted to pregnant women. But I had a lot of fear around like what these changes would actually feel like.
Yeah.
And if that would feel good or not, especially as someone who, my job is about sharing my body and
right.
feeling good in my body and showing yeah. my body off. And so how that would affect not only just like my identity, but my livelihood, I had some anxiety and apprehensions about, but I have been just pleasantly surprised about like how not only physically good that I feel, but also just like how sexy I feel. You know, I'm still wearing like really tight clothes and like
yeah.
low cut tops, and I'm like dressing as slutty as I can constantly, like midriffs showing the belly. Like, I feel like I'm feeling really in my body and good. Like, I also had fears about dating, like as soon as I get pregnant. Like, I was on Tinder super hard before I got knocked up, and I was like, I gotta start dating someone now because I'm gonna get pregnant soon. And then like it was just such a dumb, like, I like, it's such a dumb thing to say, but it's like it's like honestly what was going through my head. And that didn't quite work out, but I've also been very pleasantly surprised at the like amount of femme attention and attraction that I've been receiving.
That's it's cool.
Felt amazing. And I'm not like, oh, my sexuality has to stop or be put on pause because my body's changing, or I'm, you know, starting a family with someone else. Because like, while my body is rapidly changing, like, I'm still the same person, and I still have the same, like,
still the same old slut
desires. Yeah, I'm the same old slut. Like, it's like that didn't change just because I want to have a family.
That's a very important message.
Yeah, it is possible. It is scary, and I think there was a lot of like worries that I had about how that would actually play out, and how, regardless of how I felt about myself, how others would relate to me.
Yeah.
And I feel very blessed to be in a group of other wonderful sluts who are just like really, really into my cool new body.
That is so great. Yeah. I am so fucking happy to hear that. It's really nice to think about the gender stuff around pregnancy and femininity is so interesting. It's kind of like other femme identity stuff, I think. The image that you've created for me of femmes being really into your pregnant body is this like femme on femme desire thing, that, or this femininity desiring femininity thing that feels really sexy and alluring to me. And I want to be careful about talking about that in a way that doesn't suggest that you have to be femme or that you have to be a woman to be pregnant. I definitely have friends who are trans men who have been pregnant. Butches can be pregnant. You don't have to wear a super tight leopard print top, like, absolutely, in order to fully embrace your pregnant body.
So many different ways, and it doesn't require femininity per se. Like, it can, and it often like exaggerates these traditional aspects of feminists. But there's so many different ways to do parenting. There's so many different ways to have family. There's so many different ways to do queerness. And there's so many different ways to do pregnancy.
And to get pregnant also.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's a really important thing to acknowledge, that being pregnant is not just like the point of being a woman or like all right. that kind of bullshit. Like, I definitely don't subscribe to that, going back to like fears and worries about, you know, getting pregnant, just like thinking about how that would, like, how that erases some of my like queer identity. Ooh. And it is very normy. I'm like, I'm a breeder all of a sudden. Well, and not in the hot way.
Well, that's, I mean, it is hot, but also it, I mean, it definitely, have you read The Argonauts?
I haven't.
You got to read The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson. It is, it's a beautiful book about queer pregnancy and parenthood, and it's like funny and raunchy and very theoretical. Hey, why are people into that, listeners? Tina here, reminding you to check out the free sexuality workshops at the Pleasure Chest stores in New York City, LA, and Chicago. For example, on Wednesday, November 28th, you can check out Triple Extra Stuffing, 30 Things to Do with Your Hands, with friend of the pod, Ryan, at the Pleasure Chest shop on 2nd Avenue in Manhattan. Pleasure can be found in so many ways and places, at the tips of your fingers and in the palm of your hand. Whether you'd like to learn to give your head a hand, giving a soothing and sensual rub down, take your pleasure into your own hands, or free them up for extra stimulation with the help of toys, there's sure to be something for you to take away from this wide-reaching workshop. Open to folks of all genders and orientations. To find out more about this and other workshops, follow Pleasure Chest on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or visit pleasurechest.com. All right, now back to the show.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hearing you talk about being a cow. I'm sorry I keep laughing. I'm laughing because it's delightful. I am so interested in puppy play and pony play and all of the different ways that it manifests. I just am so delighted by the human erotic imagination. Obviously, everybody listening to that is like, yes, Dina, we know. It's just so nice also to have so many of these conversations and to know so many fucking perverts and just like have things that you have never really thought about before. Just never really thought about like the sexiness of being a cow. But you really got me on like the haunch thing.
The haunches.
The haunches. Yeah.
I want to get branded someday.
Oh, that's
one of my goals.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
I want that for you.
Right on the haunch. Thank you.
Yeah, there's definitely something about that. There's something objectifying about that too, because I feel like cows are like, along with pigs, are like an animal that I think we associate with like factory farming, for better or for worse, and that we sort of think of as
consumption
like
consumption and.
Yeah. And yeah. like the idea that like of being bred just for the purpose of your body being used to sustain other people's taste buds and or
totally like, yeah, stomachs. If you get like a little deeper into the darkness of who cows, I think that starts to play in, especially when you factor in my job, which is utilizing my body and like how that kind of plays into being a commodity and all of those types of things. It's interesting.
There's also something really interesting about the way that your body transforms so much. Like, you've talked a lot about how your body is different every day and what it must be like to be in a body that is transforming so noticeably to the person in it, and also like observed to be transforming by people, and like people's entitlement to talk about your body when you're pregnant is perhaps something that we can get to, and maybe also informs the like erotic charge of being a hookah. Mm-hmm. There is something kind of amazing about the fact that, like, the experience that you're in. I'm so glad that I'm interviewing you when you're like 6 months pregnant. It feels like you're like right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure people have talked about this, but I keep thinking about like the idea of like body modification. Like, you're kind of, and maybe this is just my brain that like when I think of pregnancy, my brain immediately goes to like body horror places, like aliens places, which makes me think of the other breeding thing that you see on the internet a lot, which is ovipositors. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh my
about?
Gosh, yes. I'm obsessed with those.
Like, I am not alien. Surprised. Can you describe what ovipositor porn is?
So it is, it's an actual toy. I forget which company makes it exactly, but it is a dildo that looks like, if you were to imagine in your mind what an alien cock looks like.
I'm sure there's lots of different things that people imagine when they think of that. But yeah.
Well, picture your best guess at an alien cock. Mm. And it's very wide, and you can actually put these sticky, juicy eggs inside.
Yeah.
And so then you can then insert them into whatever your favorite hole is and deposit these eggs inside someone.
And they're like body safe material, presumably. Mm-hmm. No glycerin, I'm hoping, because don't put sugar
in any holes.
Yeah. The idea is this like alien way of inserting like a phallus into someone and then like laying your eggs in them and then presumably like something about them like sliming out. Then that person has to like
laying
lay
your eggs your, that the you eggs. Just inseminated in them.
Yeah.
And like when you
this
look
is a po- it's you popular.
Look, it's incredibly popular. I've spent a lot of time looking at like impregnation blogs, like fantasy blogs and fetish stuff. And they always come back to these egg things and want to know more about them. And I mean, I think it's great. It's like a way to really kind of create this like, whether it's breeding or impregnation or implantation or just alien sex.
Right.
Like,
there's that.
It's a way to like make that happen. And like, you see these like very strange yet familiar oval objects coming in and out, and it's sticky, and it's, I don't know, I think it's amazing. I think it's one of the most special things ever created. Arabelle Ruff and I actually had big plans to make one of those porns, like before I was showing, when I knew I was pregnant but not showing, we were gonna like do the scene and then like finish the rest of the scene once I was getting bigger. Like, I instantly, because that's what often happens in impregnation fantasy, like lit is like it's an instant thing, like from the moment of ejaculation or whatever, then like the belly starts swelling immediately.
Oh wow. No delayed gratification. Mm-mm. There
no, I'm playing the long game right now, but yeah, it's like instant.
Okay, tell me more about all of these breeding impregnation fantasies, because I love that this is something that you're in the middle of experiencing in a very real and literal way. Mm-hmm. You're pregnant, you're a sexual being, you're a sex worker, mm-hmm. and you also have presumably a personal realm and a personal private sexuality, which you are discussing at your comfort today, but you also are somebody who is like really turned on by all of these sort of fantastical, fetish, fabulous ideas.
Yeah. And if I like that word fantastical, because I feel like that's actually like what my body's doing right now, is like doing something really fucking fantastical.
Yeah.
The breeding and the hookah and the impregnation fantasy stuff, like that's more of things that I do that are like involved in my personal life and with my partner. And then that kind of differs for me from like what I offer as a sex worker. Like, I don't do a lot of like breeding fantasy or things like that professionally.
Yeah.
That for me, those are kept kind of like in two different hives because that feels really personal and it's part of what like keeps my partner and I close.
No, it's super important to have things that even if it is a word or an identity to have that you're like, this is just something for, us. Yeah.
And I will go there like lightly with clients and with, you know, film and things like that. But what I've been noticing more from doing sex work while pregnant is that like less people are approaching me about the breeding fantasy and more about like me actually already being pregnant and them and people being either really attracted and appreciative of a pregnant body and then also like fetishizing a pregnant body. And so it's been really interesting kind of seeing the different tastes and desires and fantasies and role plays that have come along with now this like new body that I have.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've been doing full service sex work for, I don't know, like 8 years or so. So, you know, this is my livelihood and this is what I'm really good at it. And I have never done this pregnant before. So I was really nervous.
Well, you know, I have to say, you know, as a, as an old friend who lives on the other side of the country and like we were kind of just talking about how funny it is to sort of like see updates about one another and all of our sex work friends like when we like follow one another's like sex work personas on like Twitter or Instagram and then you see things and you like find out news in the way that most people listening to this are probably familiar with this phenomenon of like finding out news from people like from their social media, but also like we all have been sex workers since like as social media has become more and more a part of our lives. And so like you also get to see how the different parts of our lives, whether it's like I live in New York now or I'm pregnant is or like I'm on tour or my hair is pink now. you see it in a way that is both like social and friendly but also ultimately about marketing. And so like I think it was like 6 weeks ago that I started to see all my Maxine Holloway content was like, I'm making an announcement, I'm pregnant, and like here I'm like going on these tours, I'll be in this city, I'll be in that city, hashtag pregnant escort, et cetera, et cetera. And like you have all these like lush, glamorous photo shoots that are like focused on your belly and just focused on like your changing body, and they're just really beautiful. I just really wanted to say that. Like they're just like straight up like artful, but there's something so like smirky and knowing and also benevolent about the way that you are presenting it, where you're like, I know that I'm just like gonna stomp on all these with my high heels and like I don't give a fuck and this is my body and this is what I'm doing. And I don't know, it also just seems like really like, oh, of course. I don't know. There's this like internal logic to it that is just really sweet and refreshing. So that was like part of why I was so excited that you were going to be here so that we could talk about it right now. And I guess like all of this is to say good job.
Thanks.
And also what is it like, how did you come to the decision? Because I know you and I know that this is not something that you decided to do frivolously. I'm sure that like you're somebody who I think has really good judgment and probably decided like, is this something that I want to make a part of my public persona, a part of Maxine Holloway? If so, how do I want to do it? How do I want to manage it? How do I want to deal with any blowback like that I might get, unfortunately, inevitably? How did you come to the decision to make your pregnancy a part of your public persona? And then how has it been? Because you've not only continued working, but you've been like taking the show on the road.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question. So in some ways, it feels super natural for this pregnancy to be public in the way that Maxine Holloway is public. Because, I mean, in a lot of ways, I have made a career of doing what I would like to do with my body and sharing that with other people.
Yeah.
So this feels like a very natural evolution of like, well, you know, since I decided to become pregnant and have a family, that there is an aspect of that that will be shared publicly. And so there is something like that is attached to like body positivity and fucking social norms and really being in touch with like my agency and like fighting that Madonna whore complex.
Yeah.
Like there's part of it that is very rooted in that. And then there's another part that's rooted really economically where like my livelihood is sex work.
Yeah.
And I have a couple other hustles that I do, but like this is how I pay my rent and for food and will support my family with sex work. So part of that is like whether I wanted to or not, like this is my job. Not whether I wanted to share this publicly or not, this is part of my job and my body is part of my job. And I feel very fortunate that I knew pretty early on that like when I got pregnant, I wanted to work for as long as that felt physically and emotionally good for me.
Yeah.
And also being very aware that this doesn't happen a lot and that there are certain social expectations of all people that get pregnant and all mothers of things you do and don't do.
Yeah.
And
totally.
Being a hooker doesn't often fall on the list of things.
I mean, you're not even supposed to be a hooker in the first place.
Let alone a pregnant hooker. So like I knew that I was gonna get some blowback and heat from people. And yeah, like I like just checked my phone 5 minutes ago and I have a new like hate mail from fantasyfootball84@gmail.com who likes to email me every day and tell me that I should be ashamed and that I'm disgusting and that I'm going to scar my child for life.
Mm.
And all these things that I know are like they honestly make me laugh more than anything. But like at the same time, like that does play upon like my worst fears of how people will perceive me and
nobody likes getting those emails.
Totally. And I think there's also some really legitimate fears, like sex working parents, specifically mothers, are at a much higher risk for being questioned if they're like a fit parent or getting social services involved or law enforcement, having like CPS called,
dude,
because of the way that I support my family. So,
yeah.
So there's some like kind of funny, kind of dumb, kind of annoying, yet lightly hurtful, like hate mail that you get. But there's also this like real legitimate fear that I have of people trying to take my child away or legitimately not thinking that I am a fit parent because of the way that I make a living. And that feels very scary. And so that definitely feels like a risk that I'm taking by being so public as a pregnant sex worker. And then, you know, after I'm pregnant, it's not like, well, that just disappears. Then I'm like a sex working mom. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. Part of the I guess I hadn't thought about that. I have such a non-breeder brain. It is ridiculous sometimes. Like, I guess I hadn't thought about, because I've definitely known some sex workers who have decided to get pregnant and become parents and then, and so have sort of like taken a break and like made whatever story they wanted to make and not made that a part of their persona and then like come back to work like maybe at any point like after they're no longer pregnant.
Yeah.
And it is interesting to think about the fact that not only are you coming out about being pregnant right now, but you are also invariably coming out about being a parent. Like you're going to, it's a parent that you will be a parent. Like, yeah, like that is not something that you are going to be able to keep private from your clients in the future. Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe some of them won't have followed.
Yeah.
But
for the most part, it's like now that is a part of the Maxine Holloway brand. It's yeah. Like, okay. Like I'm full on in the MILF category. Yeah. It's not just because I'm over 19 anymore.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
feel and in like in a lot of ways I feel super honored to be a part of the sex worker mom club because they're yeah. some of like the best badasses that I know.
Totally.
And in other ways it feels scary because of, you know, all the reasons I kind of listed before.
Yeah. That's real, man.
But, you know, I don't make a lot of my decisions in life based off of fear or the what ifs. Like I'm kind of like approaching this very very thoughtfully, but also with some bravery. Cool. And knowing that like I have an awesome like support system from my partner and even other family members that are like, you got this. Like,
cool.
You can do that. You can, this will be something, you know, it's another form of stigma to kind of like grapple with and face, but like, you got it.
When you were making this decision, did you have any other role models or people that you're in community with who had done this before or who you could like compare notes with?
Yeah. At first, like it was kind of hard to find other people. I'm like, okay, like I want to do this. Like what have other people done? Which
yeah.
is a very common thing when you're trying something you haven't done before.
Yeah.
And you know, the first person that came into my mind was Sadie Loon.
Mm. Oh, of course.
Who very publicly like went through her whole conception in a very artistic and pornographic fashion.
Yes.
And you know, shot porn and worked throughout her pregnancy. And then moved to Berlin in the past few years. And before I got pregnant, I was actually in Berlin last December and we had like a 4-hour brunch.
Ugh.
And just like talked about conception and art and porn. And it was really inspiring. And at that point I was still trying to conceive, but hadn't quite done it yet. And you know, and she brought her daughter to brunch too. So
amazing.
Who's like about 5 years old now. So that was very inspirational to be like, to see someone that had like been through that, didn't like disappear for a while, like was very public about it. And like, and it's very much a part of their identity and personhood and sexuality. And that was really inspirational and beautiful to witness when that was happening. And then when I'm in this position where I'm like trying to start that, to then like touch base with her in that way, that was like a really meaningful, important day. So thanks, Sadie.
Oh my god, love Sadie. Shout yeah. out to Sadie Loon.
And then someone that I actually have not met in person yet is Lola Luscious.
Cool.
Who has now had two very public pregnancies while continuing to do sex work, and does it in this like beautiful, like unapologetic, like fuck you world way that I just like loved. And so I found her a little bit more recently. I've known Sadie for years, but watching her over the past year, because she just gave birth a few months ago to her second child, and so watching the way she just like let it all be out there in this gorgeous way was very inspirational And I really appreciated that. And like, she's a hot babe, and that was really hot to just like see all these like milky juicy photos of her. And then yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. And then her partner, her husband Zachary Luscious, actually just photographed me a couple days ago in Boston.
Cool.
And I'm really excited to see those photos, because it's like I've photographed a pregnant woman once or twice, so.
Thank you for talking to me about that stuff that I know can be really sensitive. And I think you're a trailblazer, and a lot of people will probably be looking up to you really soon. Thanks. They want to be whore mothers. So I am curious what working has been like and how your clients have reacted. And are you getting people who are specifically interested in you because you're pregnant, or people who are sort of discovering what it's like to be, I don't know, tell me everything.
Yeah. So it's been kind of wild. And I really didn't know what to expect. Like, I expected to lose some regulars and gain some new ones. But like, yeah, people have very different reasons for seeking out a pregnant escort. And it really ranges in just like, some of them just have this like attraction that they don't quite have words for, and then they don't necessarily articulate or explain it to me. Like, a lot of the sessions are very much like a more traditional GFE girlfriend experience session, where I just happen to be pregnant. And you know, those I just kind of, who knows what's going on in their heads, but I kind of assume that it's just kind of like, oh, like I just am like wired this way, or like I'm just really attracted to pregnant women and wanted to experience that. Someone told me that the very first client that I booked after advertising pregnant was this darling younger gentleman with like long wavy blonde hair, covered in tattoos, like worked at a tattoo shop. And I asked if he had ever been with a pregnant person before, and he said, you know, I hadn't, and I just happened to find pregnant women really attractive, but I also don't think that I'm going to have kids. And I was having this conversation with a friend recently, and I was like, you know, I don't know if I will ever have sex with a pregnant woman. Like, just kind of like those two things like added up in his head. And he was like, oh, I find pregnant women attractive, I don't want to have kids. Like, oh, bummer. And
just one of the many things that sex work can facilitate.
Yeah. And then he said, like, literally a few days later, I saw your ad and I was just like, I have to contact her. This is an experience that I want to try. So I think there's a little bit of just like curiosity, or like attraction and experimentation that people are intrigued by. And then you get the people that are, you know, just like really deep into pregnancy fetish and fantasy. And those are really fun for me, actually. Like,
oh yeah.
So many clients, with whether they talk about it in our initial contact and emails or not, like the first 5 minutes, like, can I call you mommy?
Well, there it is.
I'm like, yes, darling.
Oh,
call me mommy. And those have been really fun, and just like all types of like nursing role play and different types of like mommy boy dynamics. There's also like a good amount of people that are interested in cuckolding sessions. Like,
okay,
my partner and I are probably gonna do a couple of those throughout my pregnancy, where people are like really excited that I offer sessions like with the person that actually got me pregnant. So like the cuck holding and humiliation like possibilities are just like heightened when it's like an actual pregnancy and things like that. So.
Right. So to spell that out, that would be like, not only are you so pathetic that you can't get me off with your puny excuse for a dick, but also you can't even get me pregnant. What kind of a man are you?
Exactly.
Right.
Look at this big beautiful bull who just inseminated me.
It was so easy. It just looked at me sideways and I got pregnant.
Yeah, tried with you for years and then just one time with this stallion. Like, it's just The script writes itself. It's yeah. perfect.
Yeah. Very, it's very Handmaid's Tale, actually.
Yeah.
The connection of, like masculinity and, like, the ability to, virility.
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 It is virility. Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so there's Freudian stuff with, like, mommy boy stuff. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Totally get it. Nurturing. Cuckolding. Virility or lack thereof. Emasculation. What else?
What else has there been? I think also just like just curiosity. Mm. Like people, it's just, it's different. Like my body feels different than a non-pregnant person's. And just like this heightened like belly and boobs. Like there's something kind of connecting back to like how bodies are not supposed to be bigger or leaky.
Right.
Like there's this taboo thing that I think people are very curious about. And I don't think that a lot of people even fully understand it, but it's just like this idea that like, you're not supposed to fuck a pregnant woman, especially a woman that you didn't get pregnant. So like, so this level
right.
of taboo is just like really high. And I think like also like, you know, a lot of people have like cheating fantasies and all this stuff. So
yeah.
like, you know, having sex with a pregnant person kind of like plays into this like taboo and you're not supposed to be there. And I think that can be exciting for people.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I'm thinking about like the issue that comes up for people sometimes with having sex with the person that you did get pregnant, that you're like, isn't the joke about like the anxiety of like your penis like bumping up against like the fetus or whatever, that or that it's like uncomfortable because there's like another person present in the room? And then you know, I mean, yeah. the elephant in the room here is the taboo around children and sex. And I think that that's one of those taboos that is good for many reasons, but also I think it's one of those moments that it's really important to underscore the fact that like a fetus's personhood is up to the person who is pregnant with the fetus to decide.
Yeah, yeah. I very recently was very publicly told that working while pregnant was child exploitation.
Sure.
And I was just like, that A doesn't make a lot of sense, and is
it sure doesn't
super like just goes against any type of thoughts about body autonomy and agency. And it's just like that math to me just really does not add up.
Yeah.
Like this is my body.
Yeah.
And I have a pregnant body right now.
Yeah.
And any type of sex that I have or role play that I participate in is still about me and my body and really has nothing to do with like this future human that lives inside of me.
Yeah.
And so I think conflating those kinds of things is really dangerous and just stupid.
Like yeah,
it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Totally agreed. The part of the taboo is just, it's taboo to have sex with someone who's pregnant, even if you're the person who got them pregnant, even if you're like in a monogamous relationship with them and you've like are having a like, and you're pregnant together. And then it's taboo to have sex with a pregnant person when you're not the person that got them pregnant. Cause that's both cuckolding, but it's also just this kind of like, I don't know, it's like a nice manifestation of being slutty, I guess, in this like sort of way. Right. You're like swelling up with your sluttiness.
Yeah. In a body that isn't, like, quote unquote, supposed to be slutty. Like, you know, I'm supposed to be in this fragile state and very
protective
and not interested in sex and all these things. But then when you are either playing the part or actually feeling the part of being like a horny pregnant woman, like that's like dirty and naughty and like all of these things.
I'm having also this weird comparison is coming into my mind about the fact that like people talk a lot about how you like can't tell if a woman is turned on, as if, you know, swelling and engorgement and wetness, for people who have vaginas is like not something that you can notice or fail to notice. But you know, as opposed to like an erection, which is like, hello, I'm here. Right. Yeah. So like, I'm thinking about how like a pregnant body is like one of the only like physical confirmations that you're like have had sex unless you're Jane unless you're Jane the Virgin. Like, I suppose it's like physically possible to be pregnant without having sex, but like in general it's like a sign that you have had sex. So it's kind of like it's kind of like a lady boner, that it is just, it's this like clear indication that you are, and you were talking about the Madonna whore complex and and how in many ways that's like so literal for you. Your like sluttiness is like showing, and you're just like straight up non-virginity is showing in your body.
My non-virginity is showing.
But then you're also invoking, but then you're also like invoking this thing that is supposed to be, I mean, I'm basically breaking down the Madonna whore complex right now, that you're like also invoking this thing that is unsexed in our culture and in many cultures, that like being a mother, even though like how you got there probably involved sex, it was likely to involve sex.
I think so.
That then you are supposed to like, as soon as you are like a pregnant body, then you are like a mother body, and your like body again, like doesn't belong to
it's
you.
It's not about me or pleasure. It's just about housing a fetus until I'm ready to procreate again. So there's, And then I think when things are, you're not supposed to do something, what does our society do? It eroticizes it and fetishizes it.
For sure.
So I think that is like one of the big reasons why like on many vids, like pregnancy porn is one of the highest searched and purchased categories.
Well, it's also so rarefied, right? Because it's like you can't fake it.
Yeah. Very true.
Like you can fake it on
like
TV,
this combination of
but like
taboo, and you, there's not a ton of pregnant porn performers. There's not a ton of pregnant escorts. So it's like this rarity and taboo.
But also has to be like cultivated. You see what I mean? It's like you can't just like. You can't be like, okay, well, we're going to do like a, somebody put in a request for like Wonder Woman porn, so we're going to like get the outfit. It's like, you gotta, you gotta like, you gotta cultivate and gestate that.
Yeah.
And
like,
it's,
this is like method acting real hard. Been working on this for almost a year just to get that clip, just to make that MILF money.
Make that MILF money. Well, I'm really, it's, so it sounds like the combination of this like very literal manifestation of you like supporting your family is working really well, and that you are experiencing, that you're getting a lot of MILF money and experiencing a lot of success.
That MILF money. Yeah, it's been, it, I honestly like have really enjoyed working pregnant. My clients have been really wonderful and creative and fascinating. Like it's been a good adventure for sure.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So as a queer uncle who knows a lot about sexuality, I'm starting to get more questions from the loved ones in my life who are getting pregnant and having babies about sex, sex during pregnancy, sex during early parenthood, you know, sex after giving birth, whether you're the person who gave birth or not, et cetera, et cetera. So if you had one piece of advice, I know you haven't gone through the whole process yet, and maybe I'll have you back when you have, if you had one piece of advice for people who one day want to be pregnant and still be sexual beings, who are now pregnant and want to be sexual beings, who are parents and want to be sexual, what's one piece of advice that you would give?
Yeah. I think my piece of advice would be about the conception process itself, which can often be high pressure and really hard.
Yeah.
It wasn't super easy for me to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And it was a process. It took a little bit longer than I had expected. And that can often put like stress or pressure on sex. And like, you know, both my partner and I really like sex, and it's a very important part of our relationship. And now all of a sudden it's taking on this different, more like functional role in our life, other than recreation and pleasure and closeness. So I would just like, just acknowledge that conception sex is just a little bit different than like recreational sex. And for us, it really helped having that hoo-cow breeding dynamic. That was like a big part of what kept it fun and a little bit lighter. So I'm not saying that everyone has to go like find their inner hoo-cow, but like maybe try to tap into it a little and just realize that like this could be a process, and that's okay. That's very common for a lot of people, and there are plenty of ways to like keep that sex from just becoming like this functional duty that you both have to perform, and that there's ways to make it still filthy and exciting and connective, and that's gonna just be a little bit different, and that's okay.
That is beautiful advice. Maxine Holloway, you look great.
Thank you.
It's really nice to see you.
It's really good to see you too. And I missed you.
And fucking congratulations.
Thank you.
I wish you a wonderful, kinky test of endurance.
Thank you. Oh, the alligator liked your goodbye. It's kicking right now.
That's... I think that's a first for this here podcast. Yeah. So wait, you're a cow with
an alligator? I'm a cow having an alligator.
We'll talk about that next time. Maxine, if people want to find out more about you on the interwebs, where can they do so?
Yeah, my best place to check out is MaxineHolloway.com. That is the hub for all of the things that I do. You can also follow me at Maxine Holloway on Twitter. See what the latest and greatest is.
Cool. And what about Bay Pro Support?
Yes, please go check out the website is BayAreaProsSupport.com, and we are a Bay Area sex worker resource organization, and you can find out about what we do and how to get involved, how to support, how to donate, how to access resources at BayAreaProsSupport.com.
Cool. Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.